Last Word on Today FM.
I'm from Marion McKeown and Carl Thomas from the United States. This time last week, we had Donald Trump delivering what was a provocative and rambling speech at the United Nations, and that's probably been generous in the description. But he's been at it again today, this time in front of an assembly called of all of the generals of America's military. So let's just hear a little bit of what he told them they're going to be doing, that the military is going to be doing a lot of its future work in American cities.
Well, America is under invasion from within. We're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms. At least when they're wearing a uniform, you can take them out. I just want to thank the National Guard in Washington, D.C. It's embarrassing to say this. Now I can say it because we solved it. But Washington, D.C. was the most unsafe, most dangerous city in the United States of America. And to a large extent, beyond. And beyond that. You go to Afghanistan, they didn't have anything like that. You go to countries that you would think there's problems, they didn't have that. And now Washington, D.C., after 12 days of serious, serious intensity, we took out 1,700 career criminals, radical left Democrats, what they've done to San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. They're very unsafe places, and we're going to straighten them out one by one. And this is going to be a major part for some of the people in this room. That's a war, too. It's a war from within. I told Pete we should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military. Because we're going into Chicago very soon. That's a big city with an incompetent governor, stupid. They threw him out of his family business. He was so stupid. I know the family. He becomes governor. He's got money. Not money that he made.
Okay, Carl Thomas, I'm just taking my jaw off the ground to talk to you, having listened to that. Invasion from within, sending the army into Chicago, having cleaned up Washington, the most dangerous city in the world. Are you not starting to worry about whether your president has all his marbles?
Well, I'm worried about too many troops in too many cities, Matt. But there's a history of this. Going back to George Washington, our first president, who put down the Whiskey Rebellion in 1794 by calling in state militia. Dwight Eisenhower, in 1957, nationalized the state National Guard in Arkansas to integrate Central High School. More modern times, the Kent State protest during the Vietnam War in 1970, Los Angeles riots in 1992, the George Floyd protests in 2020, and then the more recent Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. Crime and protests, as you mentioned. But look, there's a common denominator to all these cities. They're all run by liberal Democrats, and they all have liberal prosecutors or district attorneys who downgrade crimes from felonies to misdemeanors or have no cash bail. And this is where the real problem lies. If you're going to elect people like this, you can only expect the results that you're getting. But the answer is not the military in every city.
Marion McKeown, what do you make of this latest speech from Trump?
Well, I'll tell you what it reminded me of first, and then I'll just answer to what Cal said there. When I heard this, I didn't laugh. I got an absolute chill, because what happened in Syria in 2011 was there were protests in liberal cities, as they were regarded, in Aleppo and Homs, and cities with big student populations and young people. And Bashar Assad, the dictator, ordered the army to basically use these as training grounds as well, to round up and attack and shoot these protesters. The Syrian army split in two, and hence you had this devastating civil war that dragged on until very recently, in which over 600,000 people were killed, more than that actually, and 10 million were forcibly displaced. Okay, so this is what, is this Donald Trump's model? Is this what he's talking about, that he's going to train US soldiers on US citizens? Forget about the Posse Comitatus Act, which I think, Cal, you've forgotten about there for a moment.
No,
and your comparisons, if you look at, Cal, why Eisenhower sent troops into Arkansas was because the Supreme Court had ordered that schools be desegregated, and the governor there was refusing to do it. So the troops were sent in to support a legal order by the Supreme Court. The same was done over and over. The other instance that you met, I believe it was the governor's, certainly in 1992 in Los Angeles, the governor's wanted the National Guard in to help to restore law and order. It wasn't at any stage any president saying, let's use these liberal citizens as target practice for our troops. And that's pretty well what Trump said. I mean, there were other things that were so ludicrous that he said that, you know, he was like a really bad insult comic who couldn't get a laugh out of his audience. He was trying to jockey them up and trying to, and they were courteous, as is he is their commander-in-chief. But what he is asking his army to do now as commander-in-chief is to disobey the law. They took an oath to the Constitution, not the president. Mark Milley, the last chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff before Trump fired the previous one for being black and woke, was the one who said, we take an oath to the Constitution, not to the president. And I hope that Dan Kane remembers that.
Cal, this listener who sends in a short question, how can they not see the blatant move towards dictatorship in the United States?
Well, I don't think it's dictatorship, but as Marion mentioned, I just left out, it's not that I don't know it, this thing called the Posse Comitatus Act, which forbids troops, U.S. military, from being active in on domestic grounds. So I think that's a real problem, and it's something that ought to involve Congress, and it's something that ought to involve a debate among the American citizenry. It's very, you know, I don't think there's a moral equivalence between Bashar Assad in Syria and the United States, but I get the point Marion is trying to make. Still, it's very, this kind of thing ought to be rare, if not, not at all. But I do think that, you know, there are people who elect these people to office, and they're very lenient and liberal on fighting crime. So if they don't like what they're having in these cities like Portland, Oregon, which happens to be the focus at the moment, then they ought to elect somebody else to try something different.
But Cal, a listener says, why is Trump not sending troops into the red states where the crime rates are worse?
Well, they're not worse either. That's propaganda from much of the liberal press here. We're talking about the cities, not the states. We're talking about the cities. Los Angeles, Portland, Chicago, Washington, D.C. You know, the hardly any of the murders in Chicago, I think there were 10 or 12 this past weekend, are even reported anymore by the media because it is so regular happening. Every weekend, 15, 20 people get killed in Chicago, and it's not even news anymore. That's how bad it's become in some of our cities.
Okay, let's hear something else. We're going to continue calling him the defense secretary because Congress has still not ratified Trump's desire to change the Department of Defense to the Department of War, although Pete Hegseth now calls himself the war secretary. Well, he is declaring one war. He's declared a war on beards in the Army.
But today, at my direction, every member of the joint force at every rank is required to take a PT test twice a year, as well as meet height and weight requirements twice a year, every year of service. Also today, at my direction, every warrior across our joint force is required to do PT every duty day. Should be common sense. I mean, most units do that already. This also means grooming standards. No more beards, long hair, superficial individual expression. We're going to cut our hair, shave our beards, and adhere to standards. And that's why today, at my direction, the era of unprofessional appearance is over. No more beardos. The era of rampant and ridiculous shaving profiles is done. When it comes to any job that requires physical power to perform in combat, those physical standards must be high and gender neutral. If women can make it, excellent. If not, it is what it is. If that means no women qualify for some combat jobs, so be it.
Pete Hegseth. Okay, there's a few things there I'm thinking of, Marion. Certainly a member that one certain Donald Trump didn't manage to pass the physical to go serve in the war back in the 1960s at the time, Vietnam, but there you go, that's one thing. If J.D. Vance was to become commander-in-chief, would that mean, Marion, that he would have to shave his beard off?
Well, apparently, but one of the things I noticed Pete Hegseth didn't ask for as this new so-called Secretary of War is he didn't ask for a sobriety test, which he could do it using himself. I mean, this is laughable. To think that he brought over more than 800 of the highest ranking generals from all over the world, leaving all of the American armies everywhere, you know, Europe, the Middle East, Asia, everywhere exposed, and with no military command, like disrupting the whole chain to come and talk about shaving off beards and getting fit. You know, this clown didn't even make it to the rank of Lieutenant Colonel, I beg your pardon, in the army. He was the lowest of the senior officer ranks. He was four ranks before below a one-star general, and he's lecturing them with this absurd pep talk. And the expense, the security risk, the recklessness of summoning them all to Virginia for what? For this absurd. You know, they despise him. I mean, it's an open secret that the Pentagon and the former generals and a lot of the current generals absolutely despise Pete Hegseth. And this kind of thing isn't going to make them like him any better. And they certainly won't respect him for it.
Okay, let's move on to what was announced. Sorry, yeah, Cal, okay.
Yeah, don't forget, Elvis Presley got his hair cut too. So, I don't think that's a big problem, all right?
I don't ever remember Elvis with a beard. But anyway, let's talk about yesterday's meeting between Donald Trump and the mass murderer Benjamin Netanyahu in the White House. And let's hear what Donald Trump said afterwards about a peace deal for the Middle East.
At a minimum, very, very close, and I think we're beyond very close. And I want to thank Bibi for really getting in there and doing a job. We've worked well together, as we have with many other countries, both of us, with many other countries, which is the only way this whole situation gets solved. And I'm not just talking about Gaza. Gaza is one thing, but we're talking about much beyond Gaza. The whole deal, everything getting solved. It's called peace in the Middle East. Israel would have my full backing to finish the job of destroying the threat of Hamas, but I hope that we're going to have a deal for peace. And if Hamas rejects the deal, which is always possible, they're the only one left. Everyone else has accepted it. But I have a feeling that we're going to have a positive answer. But if not, as you know, Bibi, you'd have our full backing to do what you would have to do.
To do what you have to do. And I know we're going to disagree in this, Cal, but even the United Nations and so many independent countries around the world, including Ireland, are describing the behaviour of Israel in Gaza as genocide. And there we have your president rolling out the red carpet for him. And let me just say before anything else, in no way, and when I'm saying that, do I in any way believe that what Hamas was justified in what it did on October 7th, 2023. It was appalling. It was brutal. It cannot be condoned in any way. But the response from Israel has been utterly disproportionate. And to see the way that he gets glad-handled Netanyahu in the United States, to many of us on this side of the Atlantic, is disgusting, Cal.
Well, this is going to require, first of all, the acceptance by Hamas of this deal. And as of now, when we're talking, there is no word that Hamas has accepted this. Number two, even if they do, given their track record of violating every other agreement they have made, there's no guarantee that they're going to accept this agreement. And then I think even if they do accept the agreement, you're going to have a situation, I think, where Israel will claim that they violated it and take Trump's line about you can go finish the job to heart. The major factor here that is not talked about, and I've mentioned it before in this program, is the religious factor. These people, Hamas, Hezbollah, some of these other terrorist groups, believe they have a religious mandate from their God to kill Jews and to wipe Israel off the map. And unless they say that Allah has changed his mind and that the Quran no longer tells them to kill Jews, then I'm extremely skeptical that this is going to work.
And what about Israeli soldiers mass murdering innocent Palestinian people, Cal?
Well, first of all, Matt, and you're right, we do disagree about this. Hamas and the other terrorist groups have for decades put their military and their weapons in schools, even in mosques, even in civilian areas. So when Israel comes after them, there are some civilian casualties. But
some.
They drop. Yeah, well, you're just paying too much attention to The Guardian. They drop leaflets. They make phone calls telling people in these areas that they're coming after to evacuate the area. What other country does that?
Marianne?
You know what, Cal? I'm going to agree with several things that you said there, but just on the last point, dropping leaflets and phone calls, where do they go? They're told, get out of Rafah, we're going to bomb it. They go over to the coast. They're told, get out of the coast, we're going to bomb it. Where do they go? It's more than 70 to 90% of Gaza is rubble. There's a blockade. There's no medicine, only recently partially lifted. There's no water. There's no medical care worth mentioning. All of the hospitals except one has been destroyed at a time when casualties have been ratcheted up. So where do they go? What is the point in dropping a leaflet telling you to get out if there is nowhere to go? So that's one point. I'm not going to go through some of the others, but I do agree with you. And my big concern is that Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, he looked like, it looked like a hostage video yesterday when he was standing beside Donald Trump. And I do respect Donald Trump for at least making the effort. For at least making an effort, although it reminded me of, I thought this is Alaska Part 2. Here's another war criminal being, an indicted war criminal being feted. You know, here we are. But at least there is a genuine effort to move towards peace. And I do believe it's genuine on Trump's part, if not for whatever reason. So I will say at least there is that. But my concern is that, A, Hamas was shut out of these. Everything was done to discourage Hamas from agreeing to this, shutting them out, not including them. Can you imagine if, with the Good Friday Accords, if they were all agreed between Bill Clinton and Tony Blair with no input from Ireland at all? You know, I mean, it's not, and that may be a poor analogy, but also the problem is, the big problem, look back to March 18th, when the ceasefire was unilaterally disbanded by Netanyahu, which paved the way for the most savage phase of this war, for setting in place the conditions that led to famine and the suffering that was just unimaginable. And so what happened there was Netanyahu, with no evidence, no proof, said that he was ending the ceasefire because he said Hamas were planning new attacks. He never showed any evidence. What was happening was they were getting to the point where talks would have to take place about the second phase, and he just didn't want to go there. So on the pretext, on a completely false pretext that Hamas were planning new attacks, he torpedoed the ceasefire and literally caused unleashed hell on the people in Gaza. So I believe, and I'm sorry that, you know, but look at the record. I think Netanyahu has taken this under extreme duress, or the pretext of going along with it. At the first opportunity, I believe he's going to say Hamas has broken this or has broken faith. And then Trump, as he said, will give him the nod, and they will unleash fresh hell on Gaza. And I wish it would lead to peace, but I really don't believe it will.
Thank you very much, Marianne McKeown and Cal Thomas.
The Last Word on Today FM.